This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. I love cooking with Red Boat because it's made with only two ingredients, wild-caught anchovies and sea salt. This premium fish sauce is made in Phu Quoc, Vietnam and bottled right here in California. You can find Red Boat at select Asian supermarkets like 99 Ranch, H Mart, and Tong Phac.
What's going on, y'all, man? I go by the name of GQ Fam. You know, I'm running a couple podcasts right now, Shooting Stars and Interview with G. You can check out some of my music at GQ Fam. Search me up on YouTube or IG.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over. You know, you look young. I don't know how young or how old you are, and I don't know like what time period you ran, but let's start, you know, with the where did you grow up and how did you get into the rap game?
I grew up in San Diego, California. I got in the rap game because I've always loved music. The first album I ever bought was East 1999 by Bone Thugs and Harmony. And then Asian rap started coming out. I started hearing it and I was like, bro, I feel like I could do this and we have more to say and to show. So that's why I did it.
What year was that when you started to kind of think about like I could do this?
I mean, I already thought about it in about what, 1998, 97, but I didn't start till around like 2002 when I actually had a computer, because before that we was recording on like cassette tapes, karaoke systems and stuff like that. Or on the radio, I would use a cassette tape, record whatever, and then I'll come back, practice it. And then later on, I would find the instrumental and try to do my own style, you know. But I did all that in 1990, like 6 to 7 to 8, 99. But I didn't really record and put it out to the public till like 2002 or 3.
Well, how old were you then when you kind of in 96, 97, when you had the idea to do it?
Shoot, man. I was like, honestly, when I fell in love with music was when I was probably like 5 or 6 or 7. When I heard All For One, I Swear.
When it first
came out. Yeah. And then I was like, man, maybe I want to sing. Like, I just feel some type of emotion when I hear this. I want to sing just like them and bring that same emotion. But then, you know, I realized I couldn't sing as good. And then I got introduced to rapping. I started hearing Bone Thugs. That was like the first thing that I heard, because it was All For One, I Swear on the MTV Countdown. It was number one. Boyz II Men was number two. Number three was Bone Thugs and Harmony. I was like, wow, I want to be like them. That's what I.
And how old were you at the time?
I would say in 98, I was probably, 10 or something like that.
Yeah. And who were the Asian rappers at that time, or were there any?
There was none. And then the first one that popped out after all that was probably Kanye. And then I heard Got Rice by some Asian rappers. And then I heard Vietnamese Gang in around 2000, 2001.
And how did you at that time get a hold of the Vietnamese rappers?
I didn't. I was, I was just doing it. I was just recording it on my computer off of like a cheap mic. Like,
oh, I'm sorry. My question was, how did you get exposed to the Vietnamese rappers?
Like, So then I started just recording by myself, and then I showed like my school friends, and then they started this website called AsianRaps.com and BitRapper.com around that time. So that's how I was getting it out there, on there.
But how did you like get exposed to Kanye or?
Oh, on Napster. I don't know how, but we used to download music and stuff on Napster, LimeWire. That's where we got all those Asian Got Rice raps, Vietnamese Gang, Kanye. So I don't know, my cousins or my brothers or something, they came across it because they were older. They're older than me. They were like, you know, the teens in high school. And I was like young. I was like 10, 11, 12 type of thing.
Yeah.
So somehow they got across it, and then I heard it and I was like, wow, like, yo, where is this? And then, you know, I got introduced to Napster. I started searching stuff like, hey, I want to use Dr. Dre's beat. So I started searching Dr. Dre's beat. Like, that's how I got my access to music back then.
Can you imagine how far The Vietnamese rap game has come since those days.
Oh yeah, it's come a long way. But like some of the people like Kanye and Ty back then, they were ahead of their time. Like right now, it still sounds good. So imagine when I heard it back then, like it was like mind blowing to me, and I felt like, damn, I could do that. Like that's what I felt,
What kind of life experiences do you think rappers need to have to put out some good lyrics?
I would say it's more on their imagination. Like when they hear, like, let's say All for One, I swear, I wasn't in love. I don't know what love is, but my imagination was crazy and my emotion was crazy. So I guess whoever has a good imagination or creative or has, that type of speech that makes people relate to it or feel it, those are the type of people that would make good music. And that's what I feel.
Wow, I didn't I wouldn't I wasn't expecting that answer. I was thinking more like, you have to live a hard life. You gotta be
That
doing
too,
drugs.
those people will probably have more to say, but I mean, the other people will have stuff to say too. They feel sad, happy, they're humans too. So I think it's more about emotion and expressions. Like they can have a bad day, they could be rich or whatever, but have a bad day. Like that might bring out that emotion to that song that he's gonna work on later. So, I feel like it's all emotion and expression. But the people that go through the hard stuff, they probably have crazier stuff to say.
Yeah, because I mean, don't you think authenticity in a hard, having a hard life shows up in the lyrics that you write?
Yeah, exactly. So when I do those type of music, I mean, it comes out naturally. I don't try to do it, but that's just how I feel. And it comes out like that. It comes out more natural. And I feel like the stuff I say, it might be deeper than a lot of other people that's not living that life.
Yeah, because when I hear, obviously Tupac or Biggie, when you hear these
Oh yeah.
rappers
Yeah,
who
yeah, yeah.
lived it, you could feel the authenticity.
Exactly. And then when you hear, like, let's say, who's that guy? Gucci product. Hey, who's that guy?
Lil Pump.
Lil Pump. So when you hear like Lil Pump, see, I can't feel it. Like
Right.
I have that feeling, emotion to it, No disrespect to him, but like, when I hear Tupac or when I hear Nipsey or when I hear Kendrick, I just feel a different way. Like, and I imagine it differently. Like, oh damn, that's what I went through. Or, I felt that, I thought about that type of thing. But when I hear like Lil Pump, I just can't do it, man. Like you need that authenticity, like you said, and it's just better that way. Just keep it real with yourself.
Yeah, but damn, when you bring up a name like Kendrick Lamar, I can't help but to think that when you as a rapper or me as a podcaster or whenever we're at our level and we think about like the level of a Kendrick, right? Does it ever depress you to go like, because Kendrick is borderline genius, right? When you analyze his lyrics and his beats and everything like that. Does that ever go like in your mind, like how long or how, what must I do to get to that level?
I feel like some people, they have that talent already, skill set, they might have that connection to get them there faster. But really, I think like it's really his skill that brought him there.
Yeah.
And I just feel like we're getting started now, like the Vietnamese and the Asians. Eventually it's probably gonna get there. But we also have that talent and drive too. And just because we're not being recognized or noticed or on the radio, we don't stop. We're gonna keep going. Like that wasn't my goal, just to stop right when, I get on the radio or someone hears me. Like it'll be my goal to still play on the radio, but I'm not gonna stop just because I don't, because I know I can still help a lot of people with the stuff I say too. And that's what keeps me going more. Like when I hear people listen to my stuff or when I go to the show, they know my lyrics. That's what keeps me going. Like I don't think about, okay, I'm gonna try to make the song to get on the radio, or I'm trying to. Like that's not how I think. So that's how I keep going and making music.
Yeah. So from 2005 to today, that's like, I don't know, 18 years or something like that. In those 18 years or so, how hard do you think you've gone? Like, and I ask this because I think in an artist's life, like as a writer, a rapper, a filmmaker, we have these periods that we go up and down, we flow. There's years that we don't want to do the work, or we take the foot off our
the pedal, like in the last 18 years, would you say like you went hard every year and you kept it consistent, or was it like you had good years and bad years?
It was probably a little bit of both, you know, like life could hit me sometimes because to make music, it takes a lot of time and money from you. And if you can't make money, you don't have money coming in to pay for your music. It's kind of hard sometimes. So I went through a lot of that. Like, you know, I couldn't afford no music video. I couldn't afford like studio time all the time. So it was a lot of in and out for me. And then, you know, I got locked up. I went hard for like the last 3 years before I got locked up. And then I got locked up for 3 years. And it took away a lot of my momentum when I came back out. You know, so I was in and out a lot. Situations like, you know, financial situations, you know, family problems, problems with the law. Like there was a lot more in life that was hitting me than just music, but I loved it so much that I just kept doing it, you know, whenever I could, whenever I got the chance.
Can we talk about your life in and out? Is that something that you're comfortable with
Yeah, it's
talking
over
about?
with. I mean, I already did my time for it, you know. I'm not too worried about it.
So when you're into music and you know you're inspired and you're passionate about writing, what makes you go off the beaten path and break laws and stuff like that in conjunction with like, because you're pursuing something greater than yourself, arguably. What makes you go, well, I'm on this path and I'm like doing good with it. And then, but then here's the law and you got to break the law. Like, what's going on in your mind that you have to, you know, it's almost like to me, it's like two separate lives, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, because like I was saying, like, you know, I love the music. It's free, like, for me to write the music, but when I want to record it or put it out or press CDs, I need money. I didn't have a job. My family's not rich. So what could I do? You know? And I couldn't really get a job, you know, so I was the best way for me was, you know, making fast money. And that's how I provided my music. Without the money, there would be no music. Like I wouldn't be content making money, making music while being broke. Like, how am I gonna pay for my gas that day? How am I gonna pay for my food? Like my
So,
mindset has to be right to in order to make good music. Like I can't do it while I'm in debt 5,000. I'm like, oh, I can't do music like that. So in order for me to do it, I have to make that fast money to continue doing it. That's why I chose to do it like that before.
got it. So that makes sense. So it really falls in line with your goals, right? I mean, it's like
And my
breaking
family is
the
poor. Like I ain't gonna lie, like my family is poor. They can't just, hey, here's money, I'm a studio time. Like, no, I pretty much had to hustle my way to get that shirt I wanted, pretty much. Like they could get whatever they could, but you know, I wanted more. So I was like, look, I can make fast money by myself. So I just did that. And at the same time, that helped me make more music. And my mind was right. Okay, I have money coming in, you know, I have females, I have, you know, weed. Okay, everything is right. Boom, now is the time. Boom, boom. So that's how I did it. Then that's why I did it, because I needed money in order to keep up with my dreams.
But looking back, would you have done it differently?
Yeah, I would have done it
How
different.
would you have done it differently? Because, I mean, what you're saying is like that was the quickest route to getting where you need to go today. So
At that time.
what would you do differently?
Now I would either you know, find investors, lay low for like, you know, a year of just working a 9 to 5 and save money and save creativity and save and boom and let it all out. I didn't have to rush it where, you know, oh, I need money. Okay, now I need money. I need music. I need money. Like I was kind of rushing it without having a plan, not knowing where I was going or what I was doing. I was just doing it because, oh, people like the song. I just put it out. People like, I need to drop another one. I need to drop another one. Like that was my mentality back then. But now, you know, like I would really, if I was really serious and had that skill set, I might be reaching out to investors, sponsors, working 9 to 5 to save my own stash to do it. You know, there's a lot of different ways that I would do it now. So that's why I created these platforms, because back then I didn't have people to tell me, hey, don't do this, like, don't drop this, like, that's crazy. It's hella, like, political or, controversial. Don't do that. Like, don't go that route. Like, so that's why I make, like, Shooting Stars is a platform for me to bring up upcoming artists to give them more exposure and a platform. So I want, like, all the new artists to hit this platform and everybody's gonna know, like, okay, these are the new artists. Boom, boom. Who's new? Who's hot? Who's new? Who's hot? So I'm trying to do these podcasts to help do that because I know what I went through. And so I'm trying to do what I can to make it a little bit easier for them.
The business of podcasts is one of my favorite things to talk about. And we're going to get to that. And if I forget, because we get into another interesting angle, remind me to come back to the podcast conversation, because that's fascinating to me. I'm a big supporter, obviously, of anybody who is, on that path to podcasting. It's a hard grind, but I think it's a very worthwhile pursuit.
Definitely.
So before we get into that, I want to know though, you say like, yeah, you could do it differently, but time in prison is actually a very interesting thing that can happen to a man, a young man. And it adds like layers to your music and to your life and all the experiences. Can you talk a little bit about the time that you were in and the experiences you had with perhaps other Vietnamese guys in there?
There was a lot that I had to learn when I got in there. It's
Like
like a
what?
it's a whole different world in there, different rules, different regulations. There's rules from the police, there's rules from the inmates, and all of it is applied. Like, I can't just go work out on this bench at this time because at that time the blacks use it or the whites use it or the Mexicans use it. There was stuff like that that I had to learn. I couldn't just cut when it was chow time, which is like lunchtime or dinner. I can't just cross through their table, boom, and get my food. I would have to walk all the way around. You can't cross through other races' tables at all. And there was little stuff like that that I had to learn, like so many of those stuff that I had to learn. It was basically the main thing that I learned was pretty much respect and mind your own business. That was the two biggest thing that I've learned.
Wow. But when I think about that, I mean, it's a way of really growing up and leveling up in a very different, weird way, right? Like you come out of there and you definitely are not the same young man that you were when you came in. And there's, really, it's fucked up, but there's advantages to that kind of, isn't it?
I mean, today I still feel like I'm learning every day, but of course, when I went in there, it changed me a lot. Like, because all we had was our words. We didn't have not even a boxer. Like, just imagine that, like, just naked, no boxers. All you had, no money. All you had was your words. So if you couldn't keep your words in there, it's a very big problem. Like,
Wow.
it's the biggest problem right there. And then it comes to the money. You have family sending money, people owe you money because they don't have soup or something, right? And I loan you two soup. You say you're gonna pay me back next week, but you don't. That's a big issue. Like when it comes down to your words and money in there, that's like the biggest thing that caused all these riots and race wars in there. So
Yeah, and yeah, I
leveled
like I
me up. It leveled me up a lot. Like
that's
I've
what I'm
learned.
saying.
Yeah,
Yeah, and I don't want to glorify it because obviously it's a fucked up thing to get locked up. And
I don't wish anybody to go prison, but whoever went in there, they learned a lot from in there. So yeah, for sure. It leveled me up though.
because out here it's the same thing. If you think about it, your word in business is just the only thing you got. It's everything.
But nowadays social media, they pretend to do this to make it look like that, So it's total opposite out here for me. Yeah, it's different. Like a lot of people be like, oh, I'll meet at this time and then they'll cancel or like those little stuff right there is the biggest thing in prison.
And it's big out here too, because that is really what separates, the kids from the grown-ups,
But then it's not people's not being penalized out here though, but people in there is being penalized. So
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
And what's the Vietnamese culture like inside of prison?
Man, that's crazy, bro. Like, if you meet a, there's not gonna be much Vietnamese that you meet in there, but any Vietnamese you meet in there, he's doing 10, 20 life. And it's crazy. It's like when I did my 3 years, I felt like, you know, Mickey Mouse compared to all the other people, you know. And there was so much knowledge, so much that they got in them. And it's crazy that they had to be stuck in there. I wish that they could be out here to share that same knowledge. And, you know, so I just try to help push what I can, what I've learned, what I could help with the upcoming artists. Like, I try to push it all in there.
Wow. And you know, these older guys that were in for all these years with the knowledge, how close could you get to them?
You hang out with them every day, all day, pretty much. That's how I you know, conversate with them. I kind of learn from them, learn how they think, you know, learn how they talk. It's really, they're really intelligent. Some people, you know, they came from Vietnam, straight from Vietnam, right? They did a crime, went straight to prison. Like, I'm talking about, he spent a month out in America. He went to prison, like my cellmate. He went to prison for 22 years. Straight from Vietnam. He came over here when he was 14 for 2 months. He went to prison for 22 years. And that's how he learned his English. So when he spoke to me in English, I'm like, how the hell you know English? He's
Holy
like, bro,
shit.
he learned everything in there. So he talked with slang though, like street talk. That's how he talks. And I'm like, where did you learn that? He's like, I learned everything in here because I only had 2 months out there. Like everything that I know or seen is in prison. I'm
Oh
like,
my God.
but he was so smart though, like it was crazy.
Is he still in?
Now he just got out. He owns his own trucking business now, so I really look up to him. I see him as my big brother. Shout out to Long, you know, like I learned so much from him. You know, now he's out here. He has a family. He has a trucking company. You know, he's a hard worker. But he just ended. He was just at the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, and he lost like 22 to 24 years of his life, you know, so it was crazy.
Wow, what a fascinating story.
But you know, every Vietnamese you meet is pretty much going to be their own story like that, though. It's crazy. And they're doing a long, long time. Like Vietnamese or Asians don't come in there for no petty crime. When we come in there, it's for something, you know, and it's going to be like a big, big stretch.
And did you find that you had a lot of time in prison to write lyrics or to work on music at all?
You know, I did, but in the beginning, I didn't care about it. Like I was, you know, worried about doing my time. I was worried about like, fuck, you know, like I fucked up. You know, my life is fucked up. I had all this music momentum, and now what? I'm in the fucking cell, counting the days, counting the clock. It was a messed up situation. But yeah, man. Yeah, that's what
Okay. Now, what is the end goal for the music that you are pursuing? Like, what's your vision, overall vision for your music life?
you know, I never thought about this when I started. Like I told you, I didn't have a plan, you know, like I just wanted to do it because I wanted to tell our story. I wanted to let out our sound, see our swag type of thing. But really, right now, man, my end goal is pretty much like to get the newer generation, to help guide them, help give them exposure, help lead them the right way. You know, be proud of your culture. Like before, I could speak Vietnamese, but I never rapped in Vietnamese and English. Or like I probably did in one song, but I never like really focused on it like that because I always thought, you know, people might think it's funny, it might be lame, it's not cool. But now, like, my goal is to only push Vietnamese English music, you know, and just to show the younger generation, hey, you know, we can make it sound cool. Watch, I'm gonna make it sound cool. So, my end goal to all this is probably I wanna turn all this to like a radio station. I wanna have the top 10 countdown. I wanna help artists. I wanna tell stories from our parents, what was their experience. So, that's like my end goal pretty much with all the music.
It's crazy that you could be driving, and up in LA, the mainstream station is Kiss FM 102.7. I can't tell you how much Korean music in Korean is being played on the airwaves. It's the most crazy thing. And I know, like in the next few years, we are next. Like, I know that Vietnamese music, somebody out there is gonna break through, and some hit song with Snoop or with some mainstream person is gonna have a Vietnamese rapper rapping in Vietnamese. And I cannot wait to that day.
Most definitely. Right now is the time. You know, once Vietnam accepted rapping, you know, it was a whole new ball game for us. It was like a rebirth for me in this music game. And I feel like, man,
yeah,
I'm ready. Like, I've been ready for this day. I've been waiting for this day, and it's happening. So, you know, I do everything I can right now to push that movement.
Yeah, it's like once Ty got back to Vietnam and did the rap Viet, it just seems like from that moment on, everything turned. It, like, you know, it was like,
it gave us a whole new life, man.
Really?
Like, that's what it did do.
You ever talk to Ty about that?
I haven't got a chance. He's been really busy, so I haven't really got a chance to talk to him, but I'm pretty sure all of our mind state is pretty much on the same page. You know, like, we see this movement coming strong, and we're going all out on it. Everybody. Ty to me to, you know, Dub P, everybody's going all in on this right now. And we don't even like talk to each other every day, but I'm pretty sure that's what we all think. And that's what we're all on right now.
And there's a lot of different sort of niche, a lot of different pockets of Viet rap in America, right? Because, you know, you got those school guys like Ty, and then you also have like Bay Area guys like Antonius Maximus, and you in San Diego. How bonded are you guys? How like connected and, how supportive are you guys with each other?
You know, like, we might not met each other yet. Some of the people that you named, we might, but I've heard of them. I support this movement 1,000%, you know. I like the unity that's coming now. Before, it wasn't really like that. Before, it was pretty much you do your own thing, I do my own thing, but now it's like, okay, let's do the show together. Let's do a song together. So right now, the way it's going, and it's going to get even better. But the way it's going right now, like, I love it, man. And I want to see it go even bigger, though. And I support everything that we're doing right now.
Have you been to Vietnam?
Yes. So I went to Vietnam my first time because, you know, I told you I got out of prison. I was on probation for another 10 years after that. So I couldn't leave nowhere. So I finally got off of probation 2018 or 19. So that was the first time I went to Vietnam. I made that was, when I went over there, they didn't start Rap Viet yet, right? They started like 2 years after I left, or a year or 1 year right after I left. So I came over there. I was pushing the issue, like, hey, let me get a song with you. Hey, how come you don't collab with this guy? You know, it was different before Rap Viet in Vietnam too.
Yep.
Even though it's just like a couple of years, it was different. Like, this guy was like, nah, you know, I'm from the South. I don't really, you know, I do my own thing. He do his own thing or whatever. Right. But now I see it like, you know, they're coming together, have the Rap Viet show. I'm like, see, like, that's what we need, bro. Like, we need to come together in order to be stronger. You know, the more voices we have, the better.
The variety of human beings in the rap game in the Vietnamese industry are such, there's such a variation.
Yeah,
From the women rappers like Suboy to, like I said, the Bay Area rappers to East Coast rappers to you in San Diego, LA guys. It is so different. And now we're thinking of like North and South Vietnamese rappers. That culture is so different the way, you know. Exactly. The way they rap.
They sound so good together right now. Like, I hear some of the songs. There's a Bakke guy and then a Nam guy. You know, they sound really good together. And that's what I like to see, you know, like different types of sounds.
Who are your favorites?
Right now, you know, I just grew on to Benzy. Andre Right Hand. You know, before that, I was listening to like Big Daddy. When I went to Vietnam in 2018, 2019, I was listening to Big Daddy, Pin Boy, Win James. There's so many of them. Wowie, I have a song with Wowie. There's so many of them, bro. Like, they're good. MC Mihai. Yeah, everybody that I mess with, man. Even I forgot to mention you, bro. Like, as all love, you know, like, I fuck with all of them.
And when do you ever envision you being part of that rap scene in Vietnam, living there? Do you ever see it?
I envisioned it in 2019. That's why I went. I was like, man, how come nobody is really pushing this issue right now? Like, I know Vietnamese, I hear Vietnamese rappers, they're getting millions of views even at that time when I went. So I was like, man, we need to push this issue where we collaborate the United States with, you know, so that's why I went over there. And I did a couple songs. I did a song with Wowie. I did a music video with Win James and Pinboy. They was really big at that time when I went. Their song was called Wang Tao Ke Bong. And they had like 160 million views. And then I was like, wow, how can I reach out to these guys? How can I make music with these guys? And I pretty much just reached out to them. And they're all so humbled and cool, man. Like, they just welcome me, you know? And I tried to rap a couple lines in Viet. I did most in English, a couple lines in Viet. It was like a Vietnamese reggae song. Man, that was so dope, bro. But now it's like I'm really pushing that issue where I'm doing Vietnamese and English every song.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Wow, it's so heartwarming to hear this, you know, that collaboration, because, you know, when music and arts and creativity is involved, you know, all the political lines, you know, you throw that shit out the window for a minute, you know, and just focus on what's the quality of the moment, right?
I mean, if that's what they want to chase, the music, the rap, you know, it comes down to unity at the end of the day. It's competition, but we have to come together in order to make a bigger movement so people could notice us.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect segue into the podcast that you started. So what made you decide to get into that? How were your first steps in getting into the podcast game?
You know, because I was like, how come there's no podcast out there really that's, you know, bringing up or helping out the Asian, you know, like rappers? And, you know, we're not on the radio. We can't just go on No Jumper. We can't go on Vlad. They only pick and choose who they want. So, you know, I was like, you know, I want to bring out more stories from our side and tell the side of the rappers, because you only know their lyrics and their music, right? You don't know what they eat or who's their top five rapper. You don't know none of that. So that's why I'm like, okay, it's a really good time since, you know, Asia accepted rap. So I was like, okay, it's probably a good time to bring out these stories and share more with the world. So that's why I was like, I got to do this. Like, I feel like I'm meant to do this.
What's the name of the podcast?
So I have two. One is Shooting Stars. Pretty much I bring up upcoming artists, ask them a few questions, like where they're from, how long they've been doing music, what's their stage name. And then at the end of the show, they showcase their talent. And then I have another one called Interview with G, like Innerview.
Oh, that's cool. Interview. Love it.
So basically, these are like for more like our parents, our famous tattoo artists, our, you know, famous musicians. Like, they kind of have a fan base, a name already, you know? And so then when they tell their story, it's like, okay, I know who that is. I want to hear more, you know? But the upcoming artists, they need that exposure, because you don't know who they are. You're probably not going to want to know what they eat and or all that, you know? So I want them to showcase their talent more on that platform. And on this platform, I want to tell more stories, you know?
How long have you been doing them?
I just started, bro, to be honest. I just started for like a couple months, you know. I had to learn the ropes, the system, how to really... They think it's just you put up the camera and it's, Hell nah. You have to do so much behind it, and I have to learn all that, and I'm still learning it, you know? So I'm just trying to get better and push that issue too.
Yeah, when you think about it, there's like 10 different, if you thought of it like 10 different departments, right? You got to be good at all 10 of them to make the
Is
shit move.
yeah.
Yeah,
You
because there's
prepare the
it's...
light, the microphone, the sound, everything to be right. It's not just you put up the fucking camera and it's done. Like, nah, it don't work like that.
Exactly. There's so much intricacies, and then you got to do like you got to research about the guests, you got to do all this stuff to
Exactly.
get, and even then it's like hard to get eyeballs, you know, out onto the podcast or ears on it, you know.
But one thing I do know is, you know, I'm willing to put in that extra work. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, I feel, you know, good about doing it, you know. I feel like I'm doing something good, and I feel good pushing it.
So sorry, I'm not sure why that.
It's all good.
Sorry.
You know, it costs a lot of money too to do like podcast stuff.
So sorry, I don't know what this is. You there? Sorry.
Someone's trying to call you, man.
Yeah, that's like four times. Crazy. But my phone is like on silent. I think it's coming in from
Computer?
FaceTime on my MacBook Pro. I've never seen this before.
Oh, okay. It's all good.
Wow. Oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
All good.
Yeah,
Like I
we
was saying, it takes a lot to really do the podcast, you know, behind it. It also costs a lot of money too. You need cameras, you need you know, sound boards, you need lighting, you need a space. Yeah, so I mean, I'm willing to do it though. At the end of the day, I feel good doing it. So I'm
yeah.
willing to put in that extra work and, you know, invest into it.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this because I want other people in the audience to hear. I hope that whoever's listening to this particular podcast that they're inspired because I think this is like such a obviously a big part of my life. And now that I know that it's a big part of your life and you just started, I want to really dig into the kind of the mechanical side of like the emotional side of doing this. So first of all, I'll start with the advantages of how wonderful the byproduct of actually doing the work is. So first of all, you get the information and the knowledge, right? Like you just start to become a lot more, I don't know if it's more intelligent, but you just become a lot more sensitive to people's like problems or their good fortunes. You're just more sensitive to it. But even more importantly than that, you develop this like deep sense of humanity and realize how fucked up you are, right? How far behind you are in the world of mental development, emotional development, and it allows you to kind of work on developing yourself to become a better person. You're like, whoa, I never thought of that. I never thought of this. And that's like the advantages. And then the other side, the good byproduct is also all of a sudden you find yourself in the middle of this community that you thought was like just the rap game or the entertainment game, but it slowly becomes more expansive. And I think that those two things I hope will drive you to never ever stop doing the podcast.
Yeah, eventually I want to, like, you know, interview like successful business owners, millionaires. I want to do a lot to motivate, you know, the newer generation, or, you know, teach them some knowledge about business or whatever they're getting into, music. I could be interviewing a rapper, he'll tell his experience about music. I could be interviewing a real estate mogul, you know, like, so I do think that far, where I want to reach out to those type of people too. Yeah, so definitely.
Well, when you're ready, let me know and I'll make some introductions.
Okay, hell
Yeah,
yeah.
definitely. 'Cause you know, I want to be on your show. I want you to have like two or three other podcasters that are growing and I want to be on their show because we have a network effect when we do this work, right? You ask me a question, I ask you questions on my show, your show. We get to learn from each other, we get to hear each other's stories. And then we get to be exposed to each other's audiences, right? Because your audience is very different from my audiences. And now my audiences get to know who you are. And I think that's the important thing about like amplifying our voices is the more podcasters we have, this is very different from any game, I think, like business or, you know, maybe even the rap game. The rap game, you want all eyeballs on you, right? But with the podcasting game, the more homies you got, the better you're going to be, because, you know, the more shows that you could surf on, the better exposure and more knowledge you start to pick up. So it's you know, I'm always preaching this network effect with podcasters.
Okay. How long you've been doing the podcast?
This is my fourth year.
Fourth year.
Feel free to ask me anything you want about it, even right now. Like, we can.
What episodes have you done already?
I probably recorded 400.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
400. But released maybe I'm at 341, I think, right now. I'm at 341, but I've recorded a lot. And, you know, sometimes some recordings are not, you know, for one reason or another, just not appropriate to release at the time. So there's that, you know, there's that, that happening, but, for the most part, I do release, everything I record.
That's cool. Do you run everything yourself, or do you have like people in the back end helping you?
I run everything myself, except social media, because I suck at that. Yeah. Oh, but in terms of recording and setting up all, but I, you know, I know what my deficiencies are. You know, I need to improve this visual game. You know, I need to crank up this visual side, because I need to start bringing guests into my studio in Alhambra. And, you know, because when you have good cameras, the visual quality and then being live in person with each other creates a different energy on camera and in conversation. It's just a different. So I have to, like, I don't know. I keep telling myself that I will do more of it and then make it mandatory for guests to come up. But I like the fact that I can do quantity. I could interview a lot of people through Zoom, but it's probably not the best. It's definitely not the best platform.
You have a cool setup, though. I see your boom mic, you know, everything right there. That's what's up.
Thank you. But, you know, I've done live ones, and the energy is so different. I mean, you've done live. Do you do all yours live?
Like in person, yeah, but I don't go live streaming yet.
Right. In person, I'm at. Yeah, because it's a different energy. You know, you can feel it talking to me right now. Like, I can't read your body expressions. I really can't, like, really get into everything. So it kind of limits it. But when we're, like, in person, I could read you a lot better. And then I could take risk and say shit that's, like, a little bit more edgy, where I can't really read you and I don't know how you're going to react at, you know, through the camera, you know.
But you can say whatever, man. You know, I'm open to whatever. Yeah.
So I really hope you don't ever stop. And I tell everybody, even if you just do it for a year or 3 years, that footprint that you leave and the knowledge that you gain to become a better human being is still beneficial than not doing it at all.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I just try to do whatever I can. You know, I'm really invested into it. And it's really like my goal right now is to push this. I feel good, like I was meant to do this type of thing. Yeah. So, you know, that keeps me going.
Do you like it more than music?
I like both. Like, when I drop a podcast, it's like I drop a song type of thing. Like, I feel like that. It might not, like, you know, the whole world view it, get a million views, but the message in there that I want to tell is there. So, you know, as long as people watch it, and even if one person, if it can help one person, you know, like, that's all I want.
Absolutely. And where can we find your podcast?
Right now, it's just on my YouTube, like my music YouTube, GEEQPHAM. Right now, it's on there, but I'm going to eventually separate the shows, have people help me run the shows and separate it.
Do you have it on audio? Like, audio podcast?
Honestly, like, I only dropped two so far. I did one for Shooting Stars and one for interview so far, and I'm getting there where I'm going to put it on Spotify and stuff like that. So right now I'm in the process of doing that.
Okay, cool. If you need help, please let me know.
Yeah. Is yours all on Spotify?
Yeah, I'm on Spotify and on YouTube.
Okay. Do you do it through DistroKid, or how do you do it?
I have a platform that I've been using from the early days called Red Circle. So Red Circle is a platform that, you know, you load it up once and then it shoots it out to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcasts. The video one is only living on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
But
So
if you
you
want your
page too.
Say again?
You have a YouTube page too?
Yeah, I have a YouTube page too.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I have a YouTube page too. But again, you know, the quality of the videos need to like be cranked up in order for people to stay engaged, you know. And I haven't thought about like numbers, you know, ever since I've started. I'm very concerned about the kind of guests that I get. If they're interesting to me, that's who I want. That I constantly want to be building up my guest list, and then at some point, you know, lock in the quality, the visual quality, when, you know, the money starts rolling in with the different sponsors. And it's happening, it's starting to happen. But, you know, I think getting the reps in for me, the interview reps have been the most important thing to do.
How long you think it took you to do podcasts to see like some type of results?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, what motivated you to keep going?
That's a good question. That's a podcasting question. I like that. You're a podcaster. You're a podcaster. I love it. What motivated me is the shame of being a Vietnamese man. I was very ashamed of being Vietnamese my entire life. So I was dealing with that.
Were you born and raised here?
Yeah, I was. I was born in the East Coast. My parents moved us out when I was a year old to L.A., and I've been living out in L.A. since I was like a year old. And growing up, I'd been to an all-Black school in my elementary years, and then an all-Japanese school in middle school, and then high school was like half all-white, and then I went to another school. It was like all Mexicans, basically. And so I'd never been part of like the Vietnamese community in that way, where I went to school with a lot of Vietnamese or any Vietnamese. And then I joined the Marines and it was like all white guys, right? And so it was like I never felt proud to be Vietnamese. There was like, you know, I wanted to be, but I just couldn't. For some reason, I just saw like the white man as the model that I wanted to become. Right. Cause I saw these like badasses in the Marine Corps and all military. So all my group of friends, we all like wanted to be that. And then, so I live with that shame of, you know, going out and meeting women and just feeling really insecure about being Vietnamese, you know, not being good enough. So I lived with that for many, many years. So that's why I started the podcast. So I can like find reasons. What does it mean to be Vietnamese? Why is it important to be understanding what makes our people so badass? And, you know, after all these years, I mean, you know, I still ask the questions that I ask, but at the same time, I realize our story is a little different from like an El Salvadorian. Our story is a little different from like the Irish. It's a little different. But at the end of the day, what is the biggest thing for me, the biggest takeaway, is we're all humans and we need to not. For me, it's not necessarily to be proud to be Vietnamese. It's more of being in love with the little things that make us Vietnamese. That's where I live now. I'm not proud to be Vietnamese. I am in love with the things that make us Vietnamese.
That makes sense.
The stories that have come up from the interviews, you know, it's all human stories. Like people in Afghanistan are going through this shit. People in Gaza and Israel. Everybody's going through what we went through, you know. Some have gone through harder lives, but I have learned to grow to really love the little tidbits of Vietnamese culture throughout the world now.
Hey, shout out to Little Saigon, since we're on the Vietnamese community, man. I see you rocking the hoodie right there,
right here. Yep.
Yeah, shout out to Chris Tran, man.
Love that guy, man.
Do you think it's important to carry on the Vietnamese culture to the new generation?
I think about that all the time. I don't know. Because my mom tries to make me do it with my kids. And I'm like, here's the problem. Here's the problem with that. My father tried to do that with religion to me. And when I think back, like on how he raised me and then how I'm living right now, it's very similar. I'm doing the culture. He did religion. but it's the same like fucking hardcore. We're like, we go hard, right? My dad went really hard with religion and I'm going really hard with culture. And I don't know at the end of the day if he went hard in religion because whatever he what drove him, what demons drove him to go that hard with religion to become try to become a good man. I know what drives me into because you just asked me what kind of drove me. My shame drives me, and I'm aware of that. But what is driving my children to give a shit about being Vietnamese? Because they're half Taiwanese, half Vietnamese. So I don't know, man. I don't know if pushing culture on them is a healthy thing. You know, I try to like put them in our yais, you know, I try to take them to festivals. I try to do the small things that are fun, but that deep desire to go and chase your culture or your religion or whatever, that comes from some weird place, man. And I don't know if artificially trying to inseminate them with this sort of like love for my culture is a healthy thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different ways you could do it. It's just natural stuff that we do. Like, let's say Thud, or let's say, you know, full moon. Let's say, you know, like if we do those normal stuff, it's up to them for them to fall in love with it or not. I did, though, you know, like when I grew up, I was like, wow. But, you know, I was ashamed, too. Like if I spoke Vietnamese with my mom in the grocery store or something, yeah, I would be kind of embarrassed, you know. But I was really proud and in love with my culture, but I didn't know how to put it out in a way where Americans would be normalized, mm-hmm. you know. But eventually now, I'm just like really proud and beyond all that. Like, I don't care what they think.
Yeah, I'm know? The same way.
And I do the same thing. Like, I don't force it on my daughter, but I just speak Vietnamese to her, or I just take her to temple. You know, I do normal stuff, but I don't force it on her. I make her meet all of her relatives, you know, and they speak Vietnamese. You know, we play bingo for Thut. We do bao guo, you know, and she's falling in love with the culture, you know, on her own. And I'm just playing my part as a Vietnamese father doing Vietnamese things, you know, and that's how I fell in love with it. And I feel like she's probably going to be the same too. And see,
I think that's the healthy approach, man, because if my dad just took me to church on Sundays, and we like got to hang out with all the people at church, I think today I'd still be going to church. You know, if he said to me, look, all that shit, that's like all the stuff that you heard in church or the Bible, you read in the Bible, that shit is like, that might not be true. That yeah, might yeah. be like Marvel movie shit, right? Marvel movies, Marvel Studios came up with all these superheroes to teach us lessons. Exactly. And the Catholic Church could have been doing that to teach people lessons about like living. Had my dad gone about it that way, I think today I'd still be going to church, because then I wouldn't be going like, is this shit real? Is not real? Like, who gives a shit if it's real or not? What's important is they're teaching you how to be a better person. And that, and being in community is something I would have loved. And now I'm just like so scarred. I can't even step foot in the church.
You know how, you know, some Vietnamese people on Thut, they have that thinking whoever step in the house, give good yeah. luck. You don't know if that's real or not, but we still
do it.
To that, you know? So it's like stuff like that. I don't think, like, you know, it matters, but I still respect it enough to do it. Yeah. So it's like,
I agree with that. That's just such a funny thing. You know, you sweep the house before that.
Yeah.
All those things that are not bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, if you don't clean your house is going to be dirty for the whole year.
Like, so,
wow.
That tradition, the rituals, the ritualized traditions in the Catholic Church or Vietnamese culture, or Chinese culture, or whatever, are good for us. I think there's a lot of things that make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. But in real life, you know, it's good to clean your house, you know, it's
exactly.
good to keep home for New Year, you know, like those in reality is actually good for you if you actually like obey to it and don't think, oh, if it's real or not, it's actually, you know, it organizes you, it, you know, something to do for that, you know? So I think it's a good thing, you know, but I just bring it around, but I don't force it though. You know?
Right, right, right. I mean, you should always be mindful of who steps in your house anyway, right? So that's a good thing that it's like, hey, it's the first of the year. We just need to be reminded. Don't bring in bad, negative people into the house.
Yeah,
always
yeah.
keep it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, your tire could pop that day. I don't mean you, like, I don't believe that you're going to be bad luck for the whole year just because your tire popped that day. You know, like anything could happen, you know, but that's what our culture believes. And I just And I still carry it on to this day. I don't know why, like stuff like that. I don't know if it's true or not, but I still, do it and respect it.
Yeah, I think that's a healthy way to do it. Yeah, and I'm like, if I get to 1,000 or 2,000 episodes before I die, if my kids want to know about Vietnamese culture, they're gonna have a full fucking record of like all the living badass Vietnamese people who existed during our lifetime. They can listen to it.
But you could tell though, like when a kid, he's interested or she's interested in something, they will ask you questions.
Totally.
Like when I was young, there was a lot of stuff that I asked my family, like why they do this, why they do that. Not because, I was like a motor mouth or like, anything, because I really wanted to know, like, well, why is it like this? But a lot of our parents, they don't like to tell their experience or like why this, why that. I like how much salt should I put in this? Just put a little bit, but when I see them put it, it's not a little bit. I'm like, why you guys say it like that though? Like, that's crazy,
Well, I have a not an answer. I have a response to that. And my response to that is, I think this is just my theory, is that language and culture have different stages of evolution. So I think like our parents' generation, they are kind of stuck in this sort of basic language mode, and we have developed a little bit more language. And then our kids are going to look at us like, damn, I can't get my dad to think this way, to communicate, because they have now more vocabulary. And I don't just mean words vocabulary, but I mean like thoughts. They have different ways of seeing things, different ways of being honest and vulnerable that we are not programmed with, just like our parents were not. So it's like this evolutionary sort of like evolution of culture and within our families, the way we speak to each other. And I have now tried to kind of understand like my mom, and it's and I and sometimes I fail at it, I lose it with my mom. But at the same time, I do a little re introspection after, and I think about their culture and their language is evolved to there, and it's hard to push them to get beyond it. You know what I mean? So that's sort of like the way I look at it.
Do you speak Vietnamese?
I
Like,
do. I speak
who
fluent
speaks?
Vietnamese. Yeah, I speak fluent Vietnamese, and I read and write, and I do a lot of translation work now, and I really get into the Vietnamese culture.
Okay, who do you usually speak Vietnamese to? Like your family or your
Just my
kid?
mom. Just my
Oh,
mom. Yeah.
okay.
Just my mom. But then, I do a lot of community work now. So the older people that I work with, they speak only Vietnamese. So I gotta roll with that. And it's improved over the years.
I mean, shoot, my mom, my grandma and stuff, they don't even speak English, so there's no
You
other
have to
option.
speak in
So
Vietnamese. Yeah. And yeah, so that's sort of like where we are right now. But GQ, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. And I look forward to tracking your work, especially now in the podcast world. And I do hope one day to come onto your podcast and share even more with you.
you're welcome anytime. When you're in San Diego, we could do a podcast at my podcast place. Anytime you want, if you're in San Diego.
Okay. We'll
Also,
be.
I could go mobile too, like if ever I'm in OC and you would like to link up, we could do a
We could do
podcast
that.
live too,
Okay.
there's
Yeah,
also Polo Saigon's podcast, so there's a lot where we could still link up.
this is a brand new day for us. Like Chris, his work over Louis Saigon, we all got podcasts, and we have we're at the controls. We're in the cockpit now. We can fly the planes. We are doing our thing, and I think it's a very exciting time in the Vietnamese media space.
For sure. Definitely. Appreciate you for having me on here, sharing some of your experiences and stories too. I really appreciate
It's
that.
my pleasure, man.
Yeah, I hope to see you again real soon though, for sure.
Will do. Yep, for
Let's
sure.
do one in person next time. I think it'll be a lot better too, because you
Yeah,
get to speak body language. You
we'll
kind of
schedule it
talk.
right after we get off episode. Yeah.
All right, man.
All right, brother. Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen,
Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.